for the delay here this morning. This morning we are going to hear sales tax bills. And there's lots of interest in the sales tax this year. We have some interesting and perplexing bills on the table. And yes, Commissioner Ines, I'm referring to your bill. It is a perplexing issue. But we are going to begin with Senator Dames. If he's here, Senator Dames has a bill on exempting public safety radio communication systems. Senator Dames, welcome to the committee. Okay. Also, if I could, Senator Dames, can we ask Senator Sharon to join you? She has the exact same bill. So we're going to hear Senate Files 267 and Senate File 183. Senator Sharon, you're also very welcome in the Tax Committee this morning.
Madam Chairwoman and committee members, for the record, I'm Senator Gary Dames, and I'm here today to introduce Senate File 267. Senate File 267 pertains to sales tax on communication systems and expanding to more counties the exemption of sales tax. It's a bill for an act relating to taxation, sales and use, expanding exemption for public safety radio communication systems, amending Minnesota Statutes 2010, Sections 297A-70, Subdivision 8, and 297A.75, Subdivision 1, 2, and 3. And with me today, I have three testifiers. I have Tom Cossey from the Fillmore County Commission, a Fillmore County Commissioner, and Jim Franklin, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, and John Schuler, a Redwood County Commissioner.
Thank you. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I think I'll just interject now. I have Senate File 183. These two files are slightly different.
Thank you.
But they speak to the same issue. So I think because Senator Dames is more comprehensive, it would be there are more issues to address in his bill. I would just want you to know that 183 only speaks to eliminating language that would allow the sales tax exemption to be used only in phase one and phase two of the overall plan to move to an interoperable system. And it would have allowed then the other counties, as they were ready and prepared to purchase and enter the system, to be able to take advantage of the sales tax exemption on this equipment. And that's the that's the total expectation in Senate File 183. But the testifiers on that bill and on that component of the bill are the same for both bills, and Senator Dames' bill includes this language plus some other provisions. I don't know if you want to do your delete all.
Senator Dames.
Madam Chair, we do have a request for an amendment.
All right, for the Senate File 267.
Senate File 267 amendment, the A3 amendment.
If you could hand that out, and then we'll take that up in just a minute. I'm wondering, I understand that Ron Whitehead is here. Oh, there he is. Would you mind, Mr. Whitehead, just very briefly going over the history of these exemptions for radios, because it does have some history, and if you don't mind, Senator Sharon, I appreciate that. Mr. Whitehead, maybe you could just give us a very brief overview of what has happened with these radio exemptions over the last several years.
Sure. For the committee, my name's Ron Whitehead. I'm the acting director of the Emergency Communications Network at DPS. What I do have to say is this is not an agency proposal or a governor's proposal. So we're here just strictly to provide a factual basis upon which you can make a decision and so forth. The sales tax exemption originated in the year 2001 in the special session. It was strictly related to the implementation of the armor system in the metropolitan area. That was the year that the Regional Radio Board, or the Metropolitan Radio Board, and MnDOT implemented the regional radio system in the nine counties, the traditional seven counties in the metropolitan area, and then Isanti and Chisago County. It was built in the Metro Patrol District at that point in time. It was sunsetted at that particular time. It was 2001. It was sunsetted on 2003. And then it was amended in the next legislative session, I believe. In 2003, it was extended to 2005. Again, for the metropolitan area. There was no implementation of the backbone until 2005 is really when we implemented the backbone in the middle in central Minnesota and southeastern Minnesota. In 2005, the law was changed because of that funding of the armor backbone in the southeast and central Minnesota. It was extended to southeast. In central Minnesota, it was only extended to the counties of Stearns, Benton County, Sherburne County, and Wright County. That was in part based upon the proponent of that was Representative Knobloch, and that was the way the bill went through at that particular point in time. Then it was subsequently, in 2007, we funded the armor system again to build it in the remainder of the state. And I believe it was 2008 when Itasca County came in. Yeah, it was 2008 in the regular session. Itasca County was able to get the sales tax exemption extended to them. The basic logic at the time this was passed was that the state is spending significant resources on building a statewide radio system. And therefore, whatever could be done to promote that local participation in that statewide system was of benefit. So that's the logic and the arguments that were carried at that point. At the present time, anyone who buys subscriber equipment and radios or local integration onto the armor system in the 9-county metropolitan area, remember that's the traditional 7 counties plus Isanti and Chisago County, southeast Minnesota, which is, I believe, 12 counties, the southeast patrol district there, and then those counties of Sherburne, Benton, Stearns, and Wright County, and Itasca County are able to take advantage of this sales tax exemption.
Thank you, Mr. Whitehead. I appreciate it. And Senator Dames, do you want to explain your A3 amendment? I think that it has been passed out to the members. Yes.
In essence, what the A3 amendment does is it strikes the region-wide, and it includes all systems. There are certain counties that will be not using the armor radio system, but will be using other systems. But they will it will allow them to be inoperable, and so therefore we want to extend the sales tax exemption to those folks as well as to the folks using the armor system. So what that does is it expands it to not only the armor system, but to other non-armor systems that makes them operable with the system.
So Senator Chamberlain would move the adoption of the A3 amendment as an author's amendment to Senate File 267. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted, Senator. Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you.
Would you like to speak in favor of the bills?
Yes. There's a few points I'd like to highlight. I come here as a Filmer County Commissioner, but I also wear a couple different hats. I'm also a sergeant with the Rochester Police Department, in which using a radio every day I work, having the opportunity to actually be able to use the interoperability equipment that we're talking about today. From sitting on the Filmer County Board, because of federal changes or guidelines, for us to comply with those, we have to look at the narrow banding mandates. And the 800 armor is one way in which we can do this. The benefits of this is the interoperability, which have been proven, the need for that, such as instances of the 35 collapse or locally for us, the floods down in the area of Rushford, where the use of this equipment for interoperability is just invaluable. If you look at in the past during this build-out, several counties have already received sales tax exemptions for their purchases, and what we're asking is that in all 87 counties be considered for this or given this. Sitting here for and asked to be here by the AMC, we support the expanding of the bill to be retroactive for all purchases going back to 2006. And the information I've been given is that the cost would be roughly $4 to $5 million.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. We also have Jim Franklin from the Minnesota Sheriff's Association and Commissioner Joe Shuler from the Redwood County Commission.
Madam Chair.
And Commissioner. Senator Daines.
It's John Shuler. The sheet is wrong. I apologize. It is John Shuler.
Thank you. Commissioner John Shuler is here to join us. If you gentlemen would like to come to the table and state your name for the record, and we'd love to hear your testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, Jim Franklin from the Executive Director for the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. Speaking today on behalf of the Sheriff's, the Police Chiefs Association, and basically all of the first responders in Minnesota that use the system, I'll be very, very brief. This is really a system that we use daily. Secondly, the interoperability of this system to connect to other states and other federal partners is invaluable. That is the purpose of the build-out of the system, and this is an issue of basically fairness. We've given tax credits to other counties and cities, and we need to finish the build-out. This will help other cities make a choice in getting onto the system. It's very difficult, as you know, right now with our budgets. This would help them make the decision to come on the system. So, with that, I'll just conclude indicating it's an issue of fairness, and it's also an issue that we encourage others to come onto the system. We don't want this to be a hindrance for them choosing not to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Franklin. Commissioner Shuler, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, I'm John Shuler, Redwood County Commissioner. One of the hats I wear, I sit on the Southwest Regional Radio Board, a 13-member radio board. Nobles County, I believe, is already migrated to Armor, and we did a test in Lyon County, which is about 60 miles away in the basement, and handheld radio, and it came in crystal clear. The towers aren't even up all across our region yet, so it's a very good system. But this is a fairness issue. For our county alone, our new census numbers, we feel, are going to be around 15,000 people. And just the sales tax impact alone is over $10 a person. So it's a huge economic impact to the county if we do not get the sales tax exemption.
Thank you, Commissioner. I would say to both Commissioner, Senator DeCreif is here with his bill to eliminate the sales tax for all municipal purchases. So I'm guessing you're supportive of Senator DeCreif's bill, and we're going to hear that bill a little later today. So. Would Ms. Pollack, would you just explain for the members the differences between the Senator Sharon bill and the Senator James bill, and in particular, would you address for the committee members the differences in the fiscal notes, because they are very different if, members, you pull the fiscal notes. Senator Dames' proposal is scored at $14 million for the biennium, and Senator Sharon's is much more modest at about $7 million. So if Ms. Pollack, if you could.
Madam Chair, to address your first question, the differences between the two bills. Senator Sharon's bill, 183, that would strike the language that refers to the phasing of the implementation of the public safety radio communication systems. And this was the phasing that Mr. White had spoke of in the last decade. Senator Dame's bill and the amendment would also strike that specific phasing implementation language. And generally what this does is just reflects the statewide application of the communications systems, so that any counties that haven't already built or implemented the system would be eligible for the same types of treatment and credits that had been available in the last decade. Senator Dame's amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. I just asked Ms. Von Mosch, the fiscal note for Senator Dame's bill does score the A3, so it does include those changes. So those are the numbers with both bills as amended, members. Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Senator Dames, is the Department of Public Safety, are they aware of your bill, and have you had any contact with them? You know, they they run the armor system, and is this in any way detract from any revenue stream that they're relying on?
I have not spoken to the Department of Public Safety about this. Excuse me, Madam Chair. Senator Limmer, I have not spoken to the Department of Public Safety in regards to this.
Is there any?
Senator Limmer, Mr. Whitehead did testify just a couple minutes ago, and maybe you want to join us again, Mr. Whitehead, about that and just clarify for Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Ron Whitehead. I'm with the Department of Public Safety Emergency Communication Network. We are aware of the bill. We have no position on the bill except to provide factual information for the committee and so forth. We did participate somewhat in the help to provide some guidance to the revenue department in designing or coming up with the fiscal note. Not that we wrote it, we didn't do that, but we do have some of the financial figures. Over the last 3 years, we've spent extensive time helping all the counties assess their existing radio systems, looking at their alternatives, which are VHF analog, VHF digital, and then the armor system, and helping them to make a decision as to what's their what's in their business interest as they move ahead because of the 2013 narrowbanding guidelines.
Madam Chair, I came in just a few minutes late, but is the money that we are attempting to exempt here, is it money that's dedicated purpose for this type of radio system? Or does it go into some general fund?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, that goes into the general fund. Sales tax goes into the general fund. So it does not take away from funds that we use to build the radio system.
All right.
And members, I believe I cut off Ms. Pollack. I apologize for that. She had one further clarification about the fiscal notes and the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one further note, Senator Dames' amendment would apply the tax exemption retroactively to January 1, 2010. So that would affect the fiscal note that Madam Chair referenced. And Senator Sharon's bill would be effective June 30, 2011. So with the Senator Dames' amendment, we'd retroactively apply to purchases after January 1, 2010.
That really helps in that. You taught me a lesson. Senator Dames, a question for you about your retroactive nature of your bill. Are there purchases that you know of out there that folks are seeking to get retroactive tax relief from, Senator Dames?
Madam Chair, in response to that, I do believe there are purchases that people have already made in some of the counties, and that was the reason for moving having it retroactive so that they could recuperate the sales tax that they've already spent. And yes, I do believe there are some counties that have already made purchases and expenditures in regards to this, to the armor and to the non-armor system.
So if we pass this bill, then those counties or purchasers would be looking for a refund from the state of Minnesota for those sales tax expenditures.
That would be correct.
Thank you, Senator Dames. All right. That is an important fact. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious. 11.5 million in 12, and that's going to go up as a result of the amendment. Is this considered state spending? There's a lot of rhetoric going on around this place about we're not going to raise any spending, we're not going to spend any more money, we're not going to take any revenue. But I just want to know if this is considered state spending or not. I don't care who wants to answer, but it is or it isn't. But it's taking money out of the state's general fund and giving it to counties. Is it spending?
Senator Buck, I'm not sure there's an authoritative answer on that anywhere here at the Capitol, and I think we could spend hours debating that issue from all different sides of the question. I'm just not sure that's going to be a good use of our time right now with an agenda this packed with testifiers and folks that are here to have us hear their concerns and their issues. And so I think we should try and keep it to that purpose, which is they're here to ask for our help with these bills, and I hope we're going to hear them.
Madam Chair, I don't need an answer today. I just would like somebody in the Republican caucus, or maybe Tony Sutton can send me a memo or a Michael Broadcourt can send me a tweet or somebody can send me something and tell me if this is state spending or not.
Senator Buck,
doesn't have to be today.
Senator Buck, I'm guessing you'll get lots of answers if you make that request. I'd like to hear an update tomorrow on how many answers you got on that. Oops. Senator Howe, then Senator Hoffman, then Senator Rosen. Anybody else? Okay, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, you know, I had a similar question that Senator Bach had asked, but in looking at this, it does say as proposed, as amended. So I believe the fiscal note would include that retroactivity, and but that was a question that I had, too. So I think it is.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for maybe some of you senior members, since I'm new on this committee, I'm wondering why these exemptions weren't extended to the whole state when this program started. It seems like we've picked winners and losers. When you do these bills and you pick a few counties and other counties aren't exempt, I'm curious as maybe Senator Bach or somebody can answer that. Why was this not extended in the beginning?
Senator Rust would like to answer that question. Senator
Rust. Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman and Senator Bakken, correct me if I'm wrong. It's where the exemptions were given where the system was being built first, and it was extended as the system got built, and the revenue estimate, if it had been at the time done for the whole state when it wasn't being built out, was not considered fiscally conservative, quite frankly. And so it was like, as it goes, not picking winners and losers, but only who was doing the building, is my understanding. And I think these are reasonable proposals, regardless of how you characterize it, Senator Bach.
Well, Senator Rust, if I could, again, will you just try to speak up a little bit more? It is hard to hear you in this room, Senator Rust. And there's something about that chair in both ends of this room that is very hard to hear. So.
But I'm not going to repeat myself now.
I think Senator Hoffman sitting next to you probably heard the answer. So, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just to clarify this proposal has been in front of the legislature several years, actually. It was my bill last year and testified with Senator Frederickson and Senator Coobley here in front of the chair. And he worked very hard to find some funding for it, and the exact same bill that Senator Dames has. So we have been working on this disparity issue, and I think it is an issue of fairness. And, you know, Senator Bach, if you would like to, you know, tell the rest of the story, but we do need to get this figured out because it is a public safety issue. And it is, I mean, we got so creative last year. We were thinking, well, why don't we have the counties that already have the sales tax exempt buy the radios for the counties that don't have it? This is how desperate they are. And this is where they're at. So we need to really try to figure out where we're going with this system and make it equal for everybody. We've had some severe issues out there where there was floods, tornadoes, and we need to get everybody up to that level of security. And it's our right to do that.
Senator Rosen, in one of my first years on the tax committee, I also had this bill for one of the phases, and Senator Pogemiller helped me as chair to make sure that it got included in the omnibus tax bill. So there's a long history of mm-hmm. folks trying to work a way to help these counties make these purchases.
Right.
Senator Bach, and then Senator Sharon.
Well, to Senator Hoffman's point, why the inconsistency? In the early days of the build-out, the state had some money, and we weren't running deficits, and we weren't cobbling together every little gimmick under the sun to keep a balanced budget. And in more recent times, we haven't had money to spend on things like this. Now, I'm willing, and last year I included this in the Senate tax bill, I'm willing to support including it again this year, but we all just need to admit we have to raise some revenue to pay for it. That's all. And I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to raise some revenue. We can have a discussion about what revenue we raise so we can pay for this spending.
To that point, Senator Rosen?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, and raising revenue or making this a priority for our budget, that's the discussion.
Senator Sharon, did you want to speak to the bill?
I do. I wanted to speak to Senator Hoffman that this committee obviously is focused on why the partial that was the original question, why some counties and not others. And in the report that I read to the legislature last year, it talks about, and in other meetings that I've had, that in the beginning, in this report, it said just five counties. This is in 2010, were involved in the ARMR system. And in a very brief period of time, many, many more counties became able to integrate into the system, in an interoperable system. But in the beginning, the backbone, the structures, the towers, all of that were not in place. And there was concern that without, and now there are 87 counties in regional governance structures to fill the interoperability gaps. All of that was not in place. And there was a fear that if they moved too quickly, that it would be it would not be an integrated statewide system. So it started in phases to move it out, in not only from a cost perspective, but to make certain that the system was integrated, interoperable, and that it was a statewide system rather than everybody racing to do various things in their own counties.
Chair. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, to Senator Hoffman's point, I think even with this bill, you're still going to pick winners and losers, because I think I just heard one of the testifiers say that they want it retroactive back to 2006, and that'd cost an additional $4 million. But you've got some counties out there that were proactive, bought the system, paid the tax, and now the ones that kind of drug their feet a little bit are going to get a benefit for dragging their feet, or however you want to say it. And so you're still going to have winners and losers with this, because I'm sure, I'm sure there's some rationale for taking it back to January 1 of 2010 to include some counties, but there's probably some other counties that maybe bought it in October of 2009. I don't know where the gentleman got the figures that it would cost an additional $4 million, but I think we need to be cognizant. Even this, you're going to have some people saying, wait a minute, how come everybody else got the benefit, but we didn't? So,
thank you, Senator. Senator Dames or Senator Sharon, final comments on this bill or either of the bills?
Madam Chair, listening to the conversation here, I think one thing we need to point out is this is a matter of safety, and this is a matter of all counties being able to be interoperable on their radio systems. And I'd just like to remind the members that when you go to these rural counties to go hunting, fishing, or whatever, and you have a traffic accident, you're going to appreciate the fact that we have this interoperable system out there. And you can say, well, will the sales tax stop it? Well, sales tax probably isn't going to stop it, but it is going to make a big difference. And we start looking at a small county like Redwood County, and the cost is $120,000 originally, and then to get the system fully completed in the next 10 years, it's $173,000 roughly. That's a lot of sales tax dollars that's going that could be used to enhance and increase the operation of this system. So that would be my final comments. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Without objection, the Chair would like to lay over Senate File 267 and Senate File 183 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Without objection, they'll be laid over. Thank you, to both of you, Senators, for being here, for the Commissioners, for Mr. Franklin. Thank you for being here and your testimony.
Thank you, Madam
I thought
Chair.
That one was going to be the easy one, members. I thought it was going to be, but now we're going to move on to even more controversial proposals. Senate File 458. This is a bill that I introduced with the assistance of Senator Rest, who is probably the Senate's expert on the streamlined sales tax. And the internet sales is a question for the streamlined sales tax. And there are some states that have attempted to do this. There are lawsuits pending. It's quite complicated. The governor has included this provision in his budget for 2012 and 2013. There are proponents and opponents. They're getting more vocal. They've come and asked me for help, and I thought the best thing that we could do is have a hearing on this so we could be informed on it as we proceed with Senate business and developing a Senate position on this. So with that, I would ask our Senate counsel to do a...
No, oh, Margaret Brusdorf.
Okay, thank you. There is Ms. Brusdorf from the Department of Revenue who will update us on the overall legal issue that we're dealing with if we're talking about taxing internet sales. And members, for those of you that haven't been following this so much, what this is if you purchase a book or something online through Amazon.com, you don't pay a sales tax. But if you go to your local bookstore, you pay a sales tax. And so we have retailers in Minnesota that would like us to impose this tax. we've got taxpayers who would like us to keep it the way it is. It's controversial in every state, Colorado, Texas, New York. They are all grappling with this issue in their tax committees, and so we would appreciate a little bit of the guidance and a lay of the land here, Ms. Brusdorf, and thank you for being here.
All right, Madam Chair, members, my name is Margaret Reisdorf, and I'm a sales and use tax attorney with Minnesota Department of Revenue. And I think a good place to start is really this issue revolves around whether or not a state has the jurisdiction to ask an out-of-state retailer to collect and remit sales tax. So we're not talking about a new tax here. It's simply whether or not we can ask an out-of-state retailer to collect and remit a tax that already exists. And as the chair mentioned, it's controversial because it impacts the Constitution in three ways, potentially. Retailers have a right to due process, and we have the obligation to not burden interstate commerce. And so when you ask an out-of-state retailer that may or may not have much activity in a state to collect and remit tax, they must have some sort of interaction with the state to warrant that. And that's where the controversy comes. And with the Internet being remote and not tied to geographic location, it's complicated compliance in this area. Would you like me to give an overview of the our current jurisdiction to tax statute?
Yes, please, Ms. Reisdorf.
Okay. In 2000, the legislature enacted our sales tax nexus statute, and that's already codified at 297A.66. And at that time, the legislature stated that a retailer will be required to collect and remit sales tax if they have a physical presence or if they have employees, affiliates, representatives in the state that are conducting certain activity. So if they, so for instance, if you've got an office, distribution center, you know, real estate in the state, you've got physical presence, you need to collect and remit sales tax. Or if you have people, whether they be employees, independent contractors, conducting business activity under your authority in the state, you must collect and remit. In addition to this, we added in 2001-2003 a provision that would say an out-of-state retailer also will be required to collect and remit because we will presume they are conducting business in our state if they avail themselves of certain regional advertising, commercials, ads in newspapers, trade journals, regionally distributed or targeted publications. Now, that is a presumption, and the presumption only takes effect if 100 or more retail sales during a 12-month period take place or sales totaling more than $100,000 during a 12-month period take place. And certainly the retailer can rebut that presumption. So hope that gives you an
interview. Thank you, Ms. Reisdorf. Questions for Ms. Reisdorf about these issues? We have with us as a proponent of this bill today Commissioner Ward Innes. And with him, if you want to come to the table, Commissioner Innes.
Former commissioner.
I think everybody gets that. Okay.
Former is the operative word, yes.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I do have
Senator
a question.
Howell?
Madam Chair, can you explain just a little bit about the court ruling and why it was thought to be burdensome because of all the different tax codes and different taxing entities with cities and, you know, back when that Supreme Court ruling for the U.S. Supreme Court ruling?
Ms. Right. Reisdorf.
Right, when you're talking about the Quill case?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, the issue was, in that case, it was a North Dakota case, and it was a office supply retailer that had no physical presence whatsoever in the state. They did, though, solicit sales through catalogs, mail order, et cetera, but they didn't have employees, they didn't have buildings. I believe the facts were that there was $200 million in annual sales, about $1 million of it was in North Dakota. But what the court found was is that you can't it violates due process to ask a retailer, it's unfair to ask a retailer to collect and remit tax when they just haven't availed themselves of the forum state. And so in that instance, the court found that Quill simply didn't have enough contacts, people, activity going on at that time. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Innes, here on behalf of Best Buy. Would you like to speak in favor of this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ward Ines, representing Best Buy. I have a couple other individuals I think I want to go first, if I could be the cleanup hitter, maybe.
Of course.
I appreciate that. But I got Mr. Steinhoff here, who represents the Retailers Association, and Ms. Laura Bishop, who represents Best Buy as well.
Thank you. Mr. Steinhoff, welcome
Madam
to the
Chair,
committee.
Madam Chair, Senators Brian Steinhoff, Minnesota Retail Association, and we're here in support of this bill. And we're coming at this provision as a fairness issue. You know, our members, as we were just explained, have to collect sales tax. They have a physical presence here. Where their competitors online, oftentimes selling the exact same product, do not have to collect the sales tax. You know, our members are here. They're paying property taxes. They're employing folks. They're sponsoring the local hockey team, local baseball team. However, they're treated unfairly when it comes to the tax collection and the way the law is set up. So we are strongly, you know, supportive of this proposal. It's our number one issue. You know, retailers in this state employ 17% of the employment in this state is in the retail industry. So, you know, we think that, you know, it's definitely a fairness issue. And like I said, we want to speak in support of this bill. I also have a couple of members from our organization here to testify. We have Laura Bishop here from Best Buy. So,
Mr. Steinhoff, can I just ask, not to put too fine a point on it, but isn't your position that it's really a competitive disadvantage that you have to collect the tax and that adds to the price of doing business here in the state of Minnesota?
Yeah, absolutely. And my members are seeing that, definitely. So you take an item that costs $1,000 and you go walk into the store, you charge $1,000 plus you put the 7% or 6.5% or 8%, depending where you're at, sales tax on that. That person goes, okay, well, I'll go shop this out a little bit. You go online and look at that exact same item for $1,000, and it's $1,000. There's no add-on to it. So the price is cheaper. The cost is cheaper that way. So it's definitely a competitive disadvantage for our members. And like I said, we're the members that are already paying other taxes here. You know, we're employing folks, like I said earlier, sponsoring baseball teams and all that sorts of things. So, you know, it definitely puts us at a competitive disadvantage. And e-commerce has become a lot bigger than it was. I mean, when the Quill decision was made, there was no such thing as e-commerce. So this wasn't even taken into account. So it's really become huge. I think it's growing. I think it's 10% of all retail sales now are in e-commerce. So what happens when that's 20% or 50%? So thank you.
Ms. Bishop, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Laura Bishop, and I lead the government affairs operation for Best Buy. For Best Buy, we very much appreciate your hearing this bill. We appreciate your authorship of this bill, Madam Chair and Senator Rest. Thank you very much. This affiliate nexus provision for us is about jobs. So we employ over 8,000 employees in Minnesota, and we want to continue to grow that business. And what we're seeing is our growth is impacted specifically by the uncompetitive nature of this sales tax. You can bet that if it's impacting us, it's impacting those Main Street retailers, and I know you're going to hear from more of them, and you've got to hear from them in your districts as well. We have 39 stores, 4 district offices, 1 service center, 1 distribution center, 1 warehouse. We collect over $150 million annually in sales tax on all of the goods that are purchased through our stores and through our .com site, bestbuy.com. What we see is this is an issue about fairness, and I think you've talked about it quite a bit, but you know, there in our mind, there's no law right now on the books that's more inequitable than this one in hampering our ability to compete in a free market. This isn't a free market right now. There is a clear advantage that online sellers have over the brick-and-mortar retailer. 7%, 8%, some states 10%, and we're asking Minnesota to address this on behalf of your Minnesota companies. It's one thing to lose sales to competitors simply because you're competing on the same playing field. It's another thing to lose a sale because of an antiquated system that's been set up in the tax code. It's fundamentally unfair. This is not a new tax. We do not view this as a new tax. We know right now that consumers are required to remit this tax as a use tax on their forms. Rarely do they. This is a tax that's going uncollected in Minnesota, and it's putting us at a significant disadvantage. This is not something that online sellers cannot do. We know that they can do it. We do it through our e-commerce site. In fact, major online sellers like Amazon, who you'll hear from later today, already collect and remit this tax on behalf of some of their sellers, like they have done with Target, like they did at one time with Borders. This was something that they have the capacity to do, but they're not currently doing it on their sales in Minnesota. They do it in Washington. They do it in Kentucky. They do it in North Dakota, where they have presence. And they're doing it in New York. New York has passed a similar bill to this. It's in law, and Amazon is collecting and remitting sales tax in New York. This is something that can be done. It is not a new tax. You'll hear from affiliate sellers today, those that operate on behalf of many of as advertisers for some of these online sellers. You'll hear that their business is at risk because Amazon or other major online entities have threatened to drop the business with them if such a bill goes through.
Excellent.
What we will say is that we have many of these affiliate sellers in our network through an affiliate program too, and if those affiliates are dropped, Best Buy, Target, Home Depot, Barnes & Noble, Radio Shack, and many other major retailers that operate affiliate programs and collect and remit tax on behalf of those affiliates will gladly take those affiliates into our programs. This is not something that should hurt in the long term those sellers. We absolutely empathize with this, but this is a threat that we have not seen play out in some states, and we do not think that we need to be looking at this as a long-term threat. We will take them on. Other states are actively considering this. 14 states have this legislation pending. New York, Rhode Island, North Carolina all have similar laws to this, and we want to see our home state take action on this. This is an issue that's critical to us. We've secured our support from some of our major trade associations on this bill. Yesterday, the Chamber came in to support for this. Minnesota Business Partnership is on record supporting this now with us as well, and we look forward to working with you to support this provision too.
Thank you, Ms. Bishop. Mr. Innes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ward Innes. I'm representing Best Buy. I just want to amplify kind of the key point I think that Ms. Bishop made. What this bill is not. This bill is not the imposition of a new tax. This bill, you're going to hear from the opponents, and they're going to characterize this as an Amazon tax or an internet tax or an affiliate tax. This is not the imposition of a new tax. The general law, as we sit here today, is that if you go into a bricks and mortar Minnesota-based retail establishment and you make a purchase of an item that's taxable, that same item is going to be taxable if you purchase it via the internet, if you purchase it via a catalog, or you purchase it via any other remote vendor. The only thing this bill does is change who is obligated to collect and remit the tax. So currently, the customer, too oftentimes, the customer is obligated to collect and remit the tax to the Department of Revenue. We know the compliance rate on that collection mechanism is dismally low. This merely flips the obligation to the retailer, the online retailer. If they have these affiliate relationships, they will be required to collect at the point of sale the sales tax that's owed and remit it to the state of Minnesota. That's all this bill does. It doesn't impose a new tax obligation. It doesn't increase taxes. It doesn't impose a new internet tax or affiliate tax. It merely is a tax compliance measure. You know, I'm looking at the tax committee here, Madam Chair. I see two former Senate tax chairs and one former House tax chair. I had the privilege to work with all three of those tax chairs. Every one of them had a consistent commitment to taking reasonable measures to enhance tax compliance. This measure of yours, Senator Ortman, falls right in that continuum, a long history of doing things to enhance tax compliance, make the tax system more equitable, more efficient, and more compliant. And that's all this measure does, and we encourage you and your committee to support the measure.
Thank you. Ms. Bonhoff?
Yes. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Roberta Bonhoff, and I'm the CEO and president of Creative Kid Stuff, and also an MNRA board member. We're a specialty toy retailer with 8 stores and an e-commerce site. We have 7 stores here in the state of Minnesota, and we have 1 store in West Des Moines, Iowa. We've been in existence in the state of Minnesota for 28 years. We have over 200 employees. We collect taxes. and we pay taxes as required by law. Retail is a very competitive marketplace, and whether you are bricks and mortar, an e-tailer, every percentage point or every dollar makes a difference. And I'm not Best Buy. I am your 8-store retailer that started on Main Street and has grown, but we've grown, and we follow the law and we pay taxes. I want to just share a few statistics so that you can kind of understand the world that I live in. And these are provided by NPD, which is a national resource for absolutely the best statistics in my industry. Amazon is ranked 5th in the toy industry in sales, behind Walmart, Toys R Us, Target, and Kmart. Online sales in my category represent 13% of all sales. If you look at September to November 2000 alone last year, online sales increased 14%, while toy store business rose 4%. Amazon in November of 2010 reported an increase of 40%, with an overall year-to-date increase of 39%. No other retail sector, and I can tell you, can report that kind of increase. When I started in this business, when I started in retail, if you would have told me that I was even going to be an internet retailer, I would have said, are you kidding? What's the internet? You know, what are we doing? But that would be like closing our eyes. That would be me saying, I'm not going to grow my business. I'm not going to have internet. We need to have internet. But I think we need to understand how quickly it's growing. And I think you need to understand where the consumer is going. And if we're going to collect taxes, it should probably be there also. How does this affect our business? As I said, retail is very competitive. Price. The price that I can go out on and the price that Amazon can go out on are two different things. You know, when you do your analytics on your website, and we have this statistic called cart abandonment, how many people come to our site, put something in a cart, but don't purchase it, and we have to figure out why, we can now track to see where they're going. The internet is a price comparison vehicle. And if we can't make the price equal across the board, I can't compete. And you know what? I can't compete on price. I pay taxes. I employ people. I have leases. I move in a different business. So evidence based on our knowledge is that that's the way the internet is used. When we research and we continue to look at how we can compete, we have to just take a different stand. But price is huge. In this particular economy, the way things have been going the last few years, I think we have to acknowledge that price is really important to the consumer. So all we ask is a fair playing field. But price is not the only factor. Bottom line is the real factor. If I could drop those percentage points to my bottom line, I'd really appreciate it, and I can't. So profit, at the end of the day, is going to be what's going to keep retailers in business, retailers who employ people, who really are looking at how they can grow, and for us, how we can support children throughout our country. Not collecting taxes, whether Amazon or any other online e-tailer, allows price, what I call price surfing, garage sale retailing, an unfair competitive advantage. I'm aware that Amazon has so far avoided this in other states by shutting down affiliates. My question is, what kind of partner is that? A partner that shuts down an affiliate because they want to avoid taxes, what does that mean? And why would any business, why would any affiliate base their own business plan on one provider? So, you know, I say that there's a lot of questions that we need to ask. There's a lot of questions we need to ask, particularly in this environment. We collect and pay taxes. I have two people in our accounting department, and we've figured it out. I know Amazon has more, and they can figure out. If Creative Kids Stuff expands its bricks and mortar, it will continue to collect and pay taxes. So I say let's take a step to make the playing field equal on this issue. Sure. After all, we're all selling the same product. So thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, Ms. Bonhoff. We also have with us today members, former Commissioner Tom Hansen from Amazon.com and Connie Berg from FlamingoWorld.com. And if you folks would come, and we'd like to hear the other side this morning. Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I always get chills coming in here, and I look at Senator Pogermiller, and I think I should be talking about unallotment or something. So, I'm Tom Hansen. I'm here representing Amazon.com, and we are here to respectfully oppose the bill offered by you, Madam Chair. when I crossed over from government into the lobbying world, I was told, you know, when I asked for advice, you know, make sure that when the first time you go before a committee, try not to oppose the chair of the first one. So I do say, I get an F on that advice, but I do say it respectfully. I wanted to provide the committee with a little context. Some of you are old hands with this. This is a issue that has knocked around the legislature for some time. Everybody has shifted seats a little bit. We have the chair's bill before us today, but we also have this in the form of a budget proposal by Governor Dayton as part of his tax or his revenue raise package, and it's about $11 million in the next biennium. This is a provision that the chair is offering this year, but it was Senator Bach last year, and then in the House it was the Ways and Means Chair, Lauren Solberg, and the tax chair, Ann Lincheski. I am familiar with this. My seat has changed, but as the MMB commissioner for Governor Pawlenty, our administration was opposed to this provision for the last 4 years, and the reasons were, and it's not a surprise to members, the governor drew a fairly bright line in the sand of what he considered a tax increase and not. And in all the debates that we had internally, this was considered, in his mind, a tax increase, not compliance, not anything related to that. But we can set all the set those objections aside because it's a new legislature, you know, a new governor, and a new time. There were reasons why we did not propose this in the Pawlenty administration, and there are reasons now why the committee should not move this proposal forward. First of all, it is very likely unconstitutional. It's being litigated in New York, and it just got sent back from their higher court back to the lower courts for more fact-finding. But the dilemma that raises, and I've seen this a couple of times from the mid-90s through now, where the state takes an action, depends on a revenue, and then it gets potentially litigated. And there's nothing worse than collecting $11 million for a couple of biennium and then having to pay it back because the U.S. Supreme Court ended up deciding differently. It's obviously the law, and we heard from the attorney from the Revenue Department, this is a new area of law. The Quill decision that came in 1992 was pre-internet days, and I don't think they ever considered or imagined Nexus would go to where it is today. But that's all to say that you need to keep in mind that this is potentially unconstitutional, and the revenue is an uncertainty going forward. It is secondly, the second reason, it is more than just a Target, Best Buy versus Amazon. You'll hear from Connie Becker in a moment from FlamingoWorld.com, a small business in Northfield, and then another affiliate from Senator Limmer's district, Carrie Rocha from PocketYourDollars.com was unable to be here due to a child care issue. But it is an issue that directly affects how they do business. And just in response to the proponents, this is an issue that is probably best done at a congressional level, you know, through Congress. And not every state is moving forward like the proponents say. Connecticut has been in the same situation that we are and looking at this. And their governor came out and said, we decided not to pursue this idea in the budget for a couple of reasons. The first is that in states that have enacted Nexus laws, Amazon has pulled its local partnerships, hurting small businesses without the benefit of new tax collection. Second, similar laws in other states are being challenged in courts, and there's some question whether these laws will hold up. A federal law is the best way to address this issue. So in closing, I would encourage you to oppose the chair's bill and Governor Dayton's proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Good morning and welcome to the committee, Ms. Berg.
Thank you for having me. In my rush to get here today, I left my notes at home on my counter, so I hope you don't mind. I have my notes on my phone. My name is Connie Berg. I'm with FlamingoWorld.com, a small business that I created. I live in Northfield, Minnesota. I am I would really like to suggest that you do not pass this bill. I strongly oppose it. If this bill passes, the state will not gain any additional taxes, and my small business income will be devastated in the process. I earn my income by selling advertising on my website, FlamingoWorld.com, an online coupon and deal site that I'm able to run from my home. I choose advertisers who offer coupons and discounts and place that on my website. I do not sell anything, and I do not transact business with these customers. I do not target people in any specific states, nor do I know who used my ads or where they are from. I work with several advertising networks to find retailer advertising that I wish to place on my site in return for compensation. Most of the time, I do not have direct contact with the retailers that I work with, only the advertising network. There is this is no different from magazine ads, television ads, newspaper ads, etc. I'm a divorced mother of two with a teenage son suffering from autism, depression, and several other issues. I have to have a flexible schedule that enables me to bring my son to ongoing therapy, weekly counseling sessions, tend to his special educational needs, and my business is literally my family's only income. My ex-husband, the father of my children, works for me. My daughter works for me. This is the only income we have to support ourselves. If we lose our income, we will have no medical insurance and no way to pay for my son's care. This burden will then fall on the state of Minnesota to help support him and his needs. I pay over $30,000 a year out of pocket for my son's medications, special schooling, therapy, and doctor's appointments. Who will take care of these costs if I can't? I created my business more than a decade ago, knowing that it was out of the question to sustain employment outside of my home due to my son's condition. I have built my business from the ground up into a thriving, successful company that allows me the flexibility to care for my son as well as pay the large amount of medical bills associated with his condition. This bill claims that by advertising my website, out-of-state retailers should be forced to collect sales tax from Minnesota citizens. However, the bill misses one very critical point. If out-of-state retailers believe that advertising with me will result in having to collect sales tax on all Minnesota sales, they will sever ties with me, putting the viability of my business at risk. And unlike the proponents from Best Buy suggested, it's not just a matter of like two or three advertisers dropping me. I do have Best Buy, I do have Target, Home Depot, and the thousands of retailers on my website. I advertise for them. I have over 5,000 advertisers on my site, and I'll probably lose a quarter of them, which is a big chunk of my business, considering that Best Buy pays somewhere between 0.25% and maybe up to 1%. A lot of those electronic retailers don't pay very much for their ads, whereas there's a lot of smaller retailers, mom-and-pop shops that are on the internet that I advertise for that pay a little bit higher commission rate, and that's where my bread and butter is. It's not with the big retailers at all. And it's not that easy for those retailers to collect the sales tax, considering those that are in-state have one tax base that they have to collect for, where these out-of-state retailers have probably over 10,000 tax rates that they have to look into, and the software is expensive. We're not talking just about these big retailers against other big retailers or the mom-and-pop stores against the big retailers online. We're talking about hurting small businesses like mine. If this law passes, I will be dropped from these retailers. I won't have my income to support my family at all. I'm a college dropout. I dropped out of college to raise my children. At my age, I've been a stay-at-home mom for years, working on my own. I don't have skills. What kind of job am I going to be able to get that is going to earn me enough money to be able to support my family, especially my son, who's going to need long-term care for the rest of his life? This legislation is going to be a huge loss to the state. They're not going to be able to collect any more sales tax. My income tax that I pay every year, and along with, there's 4,200 other affiliates approximately in this state. Many of them don't even realize that this is going on right now because they're working out of their home. We pay probably $20 million in income tax every year, the state is going to lose that income tax from all of us. There's going to be no gain and possibly a loss in income. I just ask that you do not pass this bill. It's going to devastate my family. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'll do with my son. I just beg you not to pass this. It's devastating to me.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Berg. Are there questions or comments from members of the committee? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question I did have, and that was to you first. Do we have any commissioner from the Dayton administration that's going to be here speaking in behalf of this governor proposal today?
Well, Senator Limmer, we don't have a commissioner for the Department of Revenue.
And no spokesman
yet.
For the governor.
However, yet. Assistant Commissioner Mossman was here and did explain the governor's position on this. It is in the budget, and I don't know if he would like to speak further on that this morning. He is here. Commissioner Mossman, would you like to speak about the governor's position?
Madam Chair, Matt Mossman, Assistant Commissioner for Revenue at the Department of Revenue. The question, I think, and obviously we're talking here, Madam Chair and members, about the Chair's proposal to extend or to change our definition of nexus in this regard. It is language that I understand to be quite similar to the language I walked through last week for the governor's proposal. And obviously the governor supports his proposal and would like that to be enacted. I'm not sure if that answers your question, Senator Limmer, if you'd like me to elaborate.
Commissioner, I don't want to disagree with you, Mr. Mossman, but the governor has not put language forward. I put this bill in so we could look at language, so we could view it and consider it in this committee and have a hearing on it. I don't mean to be argumentative, but there is no bill yet from the governor for any of the tax provisions or the budget. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's a very good point. You're right. The language has not been submitted yet, so that's correct. We don't have anything to compare in that regard. The intent, my understanding of the intent and the budget pages that I walked through is that it's similar to the proposal.
And in fact, members, that is why I introduced this language, so we could see how it would look and we could have a courtesy hearing so we could understand these issues, because they're not going away anytime soon. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that someone from the administration was stating that this was at least in spirit what the governor wanted to do in raising revenue in the state of Minnesota. The question I did have, perhaps former Commissioner Hansen might be able to answer. You had made mention early in your comments that the Plenty administration certainly had this on their plate of possibilities. They too had historic deficits that they were dealing with. They were searching for new dollars in order to balance the problems, the deficit problems of their day. Why didn't the Plenty administration go in this direction?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Hansen.
Senator Limmer, a couple of reasons, similar to what I've outlined and similar to what Ms. Berg described in her testimony. It was explained to us by the Revenue Department that it would hurt the people like Connie's business. It was considered by the governor not compliance, but an actual increased tax. And for those reasons, we found other ways to, that's now ancient history. We found other ways to balance the budget.
Mr. Ines, did you want to speak to that point as well?
Madam Chair, if I could.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, once again, Ward Ines, representing Best Buy. My recollection of the situation, why the administration didn't go forward with this, is somewhat different than my former colleague's recollection. And in previous years, there had actually been a split within the retail establishment about whether to go forward with the affiliate approach or exclusively stick with streamlined approach. Some retailers thought going with an affiliate Amazon kind of approach was a distraction from Streamline. And I think we all agree that the optimum solution is a federal solution with Streamline being enacted. I think more recently, Streamline has really, really been treading water. I think there's a general acknowledgement and consensus among the retail establishment that there isn't anything going to happen at the federal level in the short term. Their plate is very full. This is not on their radar screen. So I think many retailers and the retail community in Minnesota is now unified that we need to do something to address this inequity. And so the reason why I never pushed it with the administration, with the governor, was that there wasn't consensus within the business community about whether this is the right thing to do. Today, there is consensus. The chamber supports, the partnership supports, the retail tailors in Minnesota support this initiative.
Well, and members, I would just say we heard this proposal a couple of years ago, or at least we considered it. And from my viewpoint, there really has been a shift in the thinking on this bill. And the fact that two of our biggest employers in the state, Best Buy and Target, now have a position in favor of this warranted another hearing on this to hear their viewpoint and why they changed their position on this or have come forward with a strong position. So that's why we're hearing this bill today, is there is a shift in some of the thinking. There's still there are many opponents, there are many advocates, but I think we need to be as informed as possible on these issues. Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, I kind of find the discussion interesting because earlier today we were talking about repealing existing revenue streams, and now we're talking about, and that was on government sales or purchases, but now we have a business issue, and now we're considering raising taxes on certain businesses. And granted, I understand the difference on taxing some businesses here in the state and others. And I'm not sure if this is just a result of somebody making a better mousetrap and selling it to the public for a discounted price. Internet came along and it kind of shifted everyone's structure, the state's structure on how they tax. Some states jumped on it right away, imposed the tax. Others, like Minnesota, did not. And now there's people claiming unfairness. I don't know if that's just someone making, like I said, a better mousetrap and making a better profit as a result of it. It's just kind of an interesting discussion right now, and I'm not sure quite where to go on it as of this moment. I can certainly see where some of the small businesses that we have in Minnesota may be harmed, and that may in turn hurt their income structure, which hurts our income tax revenue stream. I don't know how big that is. It's going to be hard to determine that, but it's something that we should keep in the mix as we consider this into the future.
Mr. Innes and then Ms. Burke.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, just real quick. I mean, there is no distinction about the taxability of these items, whether they're purchased by bricks at a bricks and mortar establishment or on the Internet. That is the current law as we sit here today. The general law is those are taxable purchases. It's just a matter of how we're going to collect that to make sure we have maximized compliance. And I empathize with the affiliates, and I empathize with the fact that Amazon may drop them if this law becomes they've carried out that threat in other states. If they don't respect their affiliates any more than that, I do empathize with the affiliates. But we also got to remember there's thousands and thousands of jobs in Minnesota that are in jeopardy because of this unfair competition. There are jobs on Main Street, Minnesota. There are people who aren't getting hired because of this competition. There are people potentially losing their jobs because of this unfair competition. Those jobs are every bit as important as any of the affiliates' jobs. And we're trying to preserve Main Street businesses, you know, retail jobs in Minnesota that are very important to our economy.
Thank you. Ms. Burke.
Yes, something that I wanted to add that I doubt that because of this sales tax issue that Best Buy or Target is going to go out of business or have to lay people off, whereas I will lose everything that I've worked for since this has passed. And most people, you know, especially mothers, fathers who have small children, will understand the lure of shopping online. You don't have to take your screaming children to the store. And all those who don't have children appreciate that you shop online and don't bring your children to the store. But most people shop online for the convenience, not to save a few percentage points on sales tax. In most cases, delivery or shipping costs far outweigh the sales tax anyway. I know I have bought things online. Maybe once in a while there's a free shipping deal. But for my large purchases, I would rather get it from a local store where I know that I can take it back or get service and not have to pay this outrageous shipping fee. You know, it's like those mom and pop shops downtown. I live in Northfield. We have an amazing downtown. That is the reason I moved there 5 years ago. I do shop at those stores. And if we're talking about unfair competition, there's nothing stopping those shops from going online and selling. It's all a matter of making sure that you're in there where your competitors are.
Thank you, Ms. Berg. Senator Howell.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, do you have figures on how much is sold in Minnesota as far as actual merchandise that's sold via the Internet in Minnesota, regardless of whether it's taxable or untaxable?
The department may be able to answer that question. Ms. Reisdorf, are you still here?
And Madam Chair, one thing I can say to
Mr.
Inez, Madam Chair, is that we believe the most recent estimates done by the University of Tennessee that estimate sales tax revenues lost due to Internet sales believe that Minnesota is losing about $400 million a year in sales tax collections due to Internet sales where the tax is not being collected and remitted by the customer. It is a very large number and growing exponentially.
Ms. Reisdorf, if I could ask you, if you could find authoritative information about that, we would appreciate it here in the committee.
Madam Chair.
Senator Howell, just for purposes of the committee, we have Senator Carlson here with folks from Bemidji, and we are going to hear his bill yet today before we adjourn as a courtesy to those folks who came from Bemidji. Senator Howell.
I'm just wondering what the other option would be here. To Senator Limmer's point, that that if you didn't collect from brick and mortar that had online sales, what revenue would be lost by the state?
Madam Chair, Senator Howell, I think we collect about $4.5 billion a year from the sales tax. And that'd be another way to go. You can go that way. We would endorse that option.
To the folks that are here for this hearing, I don't think folks have made up their mind yet in this committee, and I hope that they haven't, because this is a complicated issue. And so I am going to ask that we lay this bill over for possible inclusion, but I'm going to implore members to continue with the fact-finding mission on this. This is not over, and I think we've got some work to do, and we should hear from constituents and folks affected by this and continue the conversation. Senator Rust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just a moment of irony. I am a supporter of the bill and a co-author on it. I also sell on Amazon. And this is your Amazon.com order that I am an affiliate. And I still support the bill.
Thank you, Senator Rustin. That was just loud enough for everybody to hear, and I really appreciate that. Thank you, folks, for being here. We're going to continue having this conversation.
Thank you.
The chair would like to lay over for possible inclusion Senate File 458 without objection. The bill is laid over. Senator DeCryf, I hope you'll forgive us for taking Senator Carlson first. We will get to your bill. If not today, we will get to another day, and hopefully you can visit with Ms. Cadoon about that, but we will hear your bill. Senator Carlson, you have a sales tax exemption proposal, Senate File 371. We are taking up Senate File 519, which is Senator Carlson's bill. The other one was Senator DeCryf's bill.
Bobby Joe was up there.
Senator Carlson, would you like to introduce your guests for the committee this morning?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're all welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Senator John Carlson from Senate District 4. With me today are members of Bemidji Aviation and also the, and I'm not sure exactly the title, but Harold Van Leeuwen is with Bemidji Regional Airport. He runs that airport. So I'll let Mr. Van Leeuwen explain his title. Members, what this bill would do would exempt the sales tax for purchases of aircraft with a certified takeoff weight in excess of 6,000 pounds, and also on the parts for their repair and maintenance. I believe that when we asked people about whether they thought that these airplanes that are used solely for commercial transportation of cargo, that anyone thought that these would be sales taxable, people would go, well, certainly not. That would be sort of like taxing someone's business that makes widgets, and we tax that equipment when in the end it's a taxable product. So I think that there was an unintended tax on this, and I'll let the members of Bemidji Aviation and the Bemidji Regional Airport address this specifically. But what happens is in our neighboring states where their competitors are, there is no such sales tax. And so as our testifiers will show you, there's a significant amount of I guess I'm not quite sure the competitiveness of them versus bidding for that cargo movement against people, businesses that reside in Wisconsin, Iowa, et cetera. So at this point, I will turn it over to the members that we have with us today are Mr. Harold Van Leeuwen from Bemidji Regional Airport. We have Mr. Mark Shuck, who is the owner of Bemidji Aviation. We have Corey Rood, who is the general manager, and we have Tracy Walter, who is the operations manager. And I'll just turn it over, I think, to Mr. Van Leeuwen.
Madam Chair and committee members, I am Harold Van Leeuwen. I'm the executive director of the Bemidji Regional Airport, and I'm the past president of the Minnesota Council of Airports, and have been working funding issues in the state for quite a while with aviation, all the way back to the take of the $15 million that happened twice, and we've had to recover that. So aviation is a sensitive issue with us. Let me begin by saying that this bill is an aviation competitiveness bill. It's how we maintain competitiveness in aviation. And if you think of it, aviation, you got to first realize that anybody that goes into aviation to make a business is a little nuts, because we end up with about a 5% success rate in aviation. And to get to that rate, it's kind of like selling cans of corn in a grocery store. You buy 1,000 cans of corn and you make a tenth of a cent per can. So our investment in product is very high. When you talk about $500,000 or more investment in airplanes, $150,000 a year in parts on those airplanes, your initial investment is very high, and you have to make it back in very small increments. So when you're paying a sales tax on those airplanes, that the surrounding states are a sales tax on the annual parts you put in those airplanes, and you have to compete against companies that don't pay that, then you're at a significant business disadvantage. I'm going to let Bemidji Aviation in a few minutes tell you the steps they've had to go through just to remain competitive in this state and the things they've done. And they're a 30-year-old company, so they're a unique model in the state. And they also own 30 aircraft that qualify under this, which makes them about three-fifths of the total number of aircraft that qualify. So to use their company as a model of impact is a real good model. It's not picking ones and twos. It's picking out there. It gives us a good statistical model to justify that. There was a fiscal note that was floated yesterday, I believe, that's been pulled back on this because nobody in the state of Minnesota tracked or had the ability to track aircraft that are solely under Part 135, which is the FAA definition of the particular segment we are talking about here exempting. That note reflected total aircraft sales in Minnesota. That's everything from the little two-place sport light aircraft and Luscom up through 3M's G5s. That's a significantly different number than what we're talking about here. Our number is less than 50. We went through individually using the FAA operating certificate registrations and identified the aircraft. It's a number less than 50. We think 49 aircraft. A replacement situation on those runs probably less than three to four aircraft a year would be replaced out of that body. So our calculations show that the impact to the state by lessening the contribution from aviation to the general fund is less than $100,000 in sales tax on new aircraft and about $150,000 on parts per year total would be the impact. So if you think about the balance, where I'm talking about being able to maintain 38 high-paying jobs at Bemidji, that investment versus the lessening of revenue to the state from aviation, it's a good investment. And that's why we're here asking for this exemption, so that we can keep these companies competitive. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Mark Shuck, who's one of the original founders of Bemidji Aviation.
Mr. Shuck, is that, did I say that right?
Say that again.
Your name, sir?
I didn't understand what you said.
Your name, sir, for the record?
Madam Chairman, my name is Mark Shuck, and I'm the Vice President of Bemidji Aviation and the committee.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mark's anyway, been flying too long.
Yeah, I can't hear very good. Imagine that. Anyways, I myself and then my partner, Larry Diffley, came to Bemidji in 1970 and bought Bemidji Aviation, and we've been there since then. And we started out with, we brought one airplane with us from California, and we bought three airplanes that were in the business. And since then, we've increased our number of airplanes, actually up to number 40, I think, right now. But the only way we've done it is because we've been there, you know, from early in the morning until late at night and all night. And anyways, we started out with those three airplanes and three employees. And in 1975, we bought our first twin, and so we could haul passengers during all kind of weather. And then by 1981, we had increased a few more airplanes in reinvesting our money. And by then, we started the Bemidji Airlines. And we ran that to Minneapolis daily, three times a day, until 1991, when we weren't making any money at it anymore, so we shut down the airlines. But in the meantime, in about 1985, we started hauling cargo. And we had got some scheduled runs for overnight freight, and so that business was picking up. So we went into that business and got the sufficient airplanes and hired more people. And so we ended up, as now, you know, we have 40 airplanes, and we have 48 airplanes, or 48 employees, I think, in the state of Minnesota that we hire. And we'd like to stay here, and if we could accomplish this, well, maybe we will.
Thank you, Mr. Shuck. Ms. Rood, General Manager of Bemidji Aviation Services, yeah. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name's Corey Rood. I'm the General Manager at Bemidji Aviation. The main focus of our business, as Mark said, has changed over the years so that we're more directly involved now with overnight freight. The business is very competitive. We operate 10 runs every morning and every evening into and out of Minneapolis Airport. Our customer has 23 small feeder aircraft operators in the United States. 11 of them are in this area and are our direct competitors. Of all those 11, we're the only one in Minnesota. The biggest majority are in Wisconsin and Michigan. And as my other boss was considering moving us out of the state so that we can be competitive, I thought, well, what makes these others more able to be competitive? So I looked into the other states. And Part 135 operators with aircraft over 6,000 pounds are exempt from sales and use tax on parts for maintaining their aircraft and on aircraft purchases. They also have lower registration fees. And when we do our bids on our cargo contracts, we're going out to 4 decimal points to be competitive. And with everything else being equal, putting us in Minnesota, I think we have some charts, we're at a competitive disadvantage. We're having to build costs into our contracts that our competitors don't. And we find now our competitors are breathing down our necks, and we can't afford to lose business because of that. And they're moving in around us. And their operating costs are just significantly lower, and it's just more and more difficult for us to compete. And these charts refer to one airplane. And we're talking about 30 airplanes that we have, that we operate in the freight business.
Ms. Reed, can you just read the bottom of that screen? It's hard to read. I think I can get most of it, but would you read it for folks?
The first one is Minnesota.
Oh, thank you.
And we have it printed out. The second state showing is Illinois, then Michigan, then Montana, New Hampshire, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And those are where we find our competitors. So that's why we selected those particular states. And in looking at this, rather than moving the business to another state, I like living in Bemidji, I thought, well, why not call Senator Carlson and tell him that other states, in order to assist, and this isn't for private aircraft, this is commercially operated aircraft that operate for cargo and passenger purposes. And there, in Minnesota, there's not another operator that really does what we do. There are passenger carriers, but not that operate the same kind of freight contracts that we do. And to attempt to cope with this over the past years, as it's gotten more difficult, we've had a wage freeze for our employees going on 3 years, which our employees are not wild about. We've upped our deductibles on our health insurance. We've done everything within our power. We try to buy smartly. We store fuel rather than buying it. We store large tanker loads of fuel at different airports we fly into. We've done everything we can to be competitive. We watch all our costs, and basically it's just not enough anymore. This exemption for sales and use tax, though it doesn't seem like big dollars when you look at it, would allow us to stay in Minnesota, where we have 48 employees. Our payroll is about $1.9 million for those 48 employees in Minnesota. So we have fairly good jobs. Our employees largely own houses and have their families in the towns where they live. And what we're looking at now is we're in a position where overnight freight is increasing. We're needing to move to larger aircraft, which are significantly more expensive. And then you look at the sales tax in Minnesota, and we'd also like to add a hangar in Bemidji for these larger aircraft. We'd like to add employees for these larger aircraft. And we just can't. With the competitive disadvantages in the state, and we hope that you'll consider changing that. And there are limited operators affected by this in Minnesota, and I think I can turn that over to Tracy Walter, our Director of Operations.
Ms. Walter, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chairperson, committee members, my name for the record is Tracy Walter, and I'm the Director of Operations at Bemidji Aviation. One thing we do want to mention, we are an employee-owned company. We are an ESOP. We became an ESOP in 2006, which gave all of the employees, including myself, a wonderful vision for our future to be able to let Mark and Larry retire and continue to grow our company. In Bemidji Aviation, we currently have 13 contracts for overnight freight, 10 of which are in Minnesota. Two of them are in Wisconsin, and one is in North Dakota. So it was not easy for us, but to look elsewhere and say, well, what do we do in other states? We employ, of the 48 employees we have in Minnesota, 20 of those are pilots with an average income of $39,000. And you would all agree that is a very well-paid job in Minnesota. They live in cities of Duluth, Eveleth, Brainerd, Bemidji, Thief River Falls, Marshall, Alexandria, Detroit Lakes, and we do have five of them in the Minneapolis metro area. We have aircraft based at 11 different airports in Minnesota that we buy fuel at, pay landing fees, have jobs for those employees there, so we can have our freight fly every night, every morning, 6 days a week. um, We, as Corey explained, would continue to like to grow our company. I won't say this is a family business, but my husband also works for Bemidji Aviation. So he's our chief pilot. I'm the director of operations. We work very closely together every day. He grew up at Bemidji. We raise our children there and would like to continue to operate there. We don't want to move. And I believe that's what I had to say on the operational side. I'm emotional about this, and I don't know why. So, but I see a future with the continued costs that we won't be able to raise our kids there and keep all of those jobs in Minnesota. And I know our pilots that have small children that work with us enjoy their jobs and want to continue living where they live because they can be a pilot that love aviation and not have to work for a major company.
Thank you, Ms. Walter, for your testimony. Senator Carlson, there is not a Department of Revenue estimate yet. Members, that's because the Department of Revenue is redoing it, is my understanding. So we will get that revenue estimate as soon as it's available. We'll make sure members of the committee have it. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, on that, Mr. Van Leeuwen, I think, mentioned comment about the fiscal note, and I thought you were saying like 100,000 or so. I just looking at the cost of the sales tax per airplane and so on. What was your guess? I mean, just I know we'll get the fiscal note, but
what you see there is we used for those slides you have in your hand a purchase cost of $600,000 on the airplane. The state uses a lesser number of $400,000 in cost. All right, that was one model of aircraft that we used as an example model to show a consistency through the chart that we knew that, and that's some aircraft that they recently bought. So we knew what that was going to be, and that was a known to us. When we were sitting there last night going through the operators in the state, the list of aircraft they have, what we figured to be a calculation on parts and replacement of aircraft, we had, in parts, the state sales tax reduction would be about $150,000 a year, and in sales of aircraft, the state sales tax reduction would be about less than 100,000, because you only aircraft last about 15 years. You're going to replace about 3%, three aircraft out of 50 over a period of time. The revenue department, as Madam Chair mentioned, had used the whole spectrum of aircraft replacements in the state, and they said there were 300 aircraft at $400,000 a piece sold every year in the state. When you're talking about only 14 operators that we know, and of that that operate aircraft in this category of 6,000 pounds or greater, it was pretty easy for us to isolate that number down last night to a different number.
Thank you, remember, sir.
We're talking about lessening the contribution of aviation to the general fund. We're not asking for money from the state in terms of that.
Understood. We grapple with that terminology and how to explain that every single day in this committee.
As we gather
now. Other comments or questions? Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I just asked to make sure that the sales tax for these type of airplane goes into the general fund.
Correct.
Because I was concerned that, you know, the airline registration tax and the major airline property tax and the airplane fuel surcharge goes into the dedicated fund. And so, you know, I'd like to see what that fiscal note looks like, but also along with that, I'd like to know how much registration tax that these planes and these providers actually provide, and maybe along with a short synopsis of the fuel surtax that actually goes in that dedicated fund to show, because I certainly think we do need to be more competitive with our neighbors, because if we do lose those aircrafts, we're going to lose the registration tax, the fuel surcharge tax, all those things. So there's a lot of things that go into this.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a comment. I've sat on this committee now for 8 weeks, and we've had business after business after business come before us and beg us to be more competitive with our neighbors, and I've made comments about it. We've got to be more competitive, not just with our neighbors, but with the whole country. And so, again, we have another business who wants to remain in Minnesota. They've proven to be a family-friendly business, and we're making them beg the legislature to run their business. And I just want to say I'm sorry about that. I wish you guys could just go home and run your business.
Madam Chair, may I address Senator Howe's discussion a little bit? I've had the
Mr.
privilege
Van Leeuwen, is that right?
Yes.
Mr. Van Leeuwen.
I've had the privilege of working with the legislature for the last 3 years over trying to figure out how to fund aviation. I sat with several of you, I know Senator Rest, on that committee to do that. We are preparing to bring a bill forward in the near future that talks to the overall funding issue and competitiveness of aviation in the state. That deals with the dedicated fund section that Senator Howe is referring to, where there is an aviation trust, or not by statute, not by constitutional amendment, which is why Governor Plenty got to take the $15 million out of it, which a couple of you heard me when I met your airplanes on the fly around to talk about that. We do need to address that. It is being addressed, and there is a bill to come forward on that whole discussion. This is a very targeted bill at a very small increment that has a high payback investment, and I do want to make that point. So I appreciate that, Senator Norton.
Thank you. This is a complicated issue for us because every time we grant an exemption, we are essentially picking winners and losers in our tax code. And that is a tough thing for us to do here in St. Paul. And I'm not sure that we're the best ones to do it. And so I appreciate your being here to explain the situation from your point of view. And we will continue to work on this issue. We appreciate so much your being here. And members, without objection, I would ask that we lay over Senate File 519 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, folks, for being here.
Thank you, ma'am.
Members,
thank
you for your work on this. We'll have Senator DeCryf rescheduled for another day, which adds to the complexity of the sales tax issues. Tomorrow's hearing will be on dynamic scoring. We have testifiers Dan Mitchell from the Cato Institute, Dr. John Spry from St. Thomas, and Dr. Paul Wilson from the Department of Revenue. At 9:40, we will hear from Dr. Stinson and Mr. Showalter about the capital gains revenue and other revenue projections in the forecast. Without further business, the committee's adjourned. Okay.